Mr. Derek Veenhoff.
He's better known as Deke.
Drinking liquor with DJ Deke, we out laughing.
Yo, Deke.
All right, so hey, everybody. We're here in the makeshift studio in my mother's sunroom. Thanks a lot, Kojiko, you bastards. We got the Deke sign in the back there, but my image might re-flip, so not sure if you can read it, everybody, but I'm here with a random stranger from Twitter, Juan Q Public. Don't know his real name, but we don't need to know his real name. That's not important.
Grew up at a time in the internet. Kept that on the down low.
So how are you doing, man? Who are you? Where are you from? Are you a troll? Are you just a person?
I'm no troll. I'm a real person. Come from Los Angeles, born and raised the city, whole life.
All right. So LA, I've never been. It's a large place. So does it matter which part you're from? Do you have to specify south side, north side?
It's helpful if you're here in Los Angeles. Yeah. It's a big town.
Right.
And you've got your pockets of hipsters. Your pockets of successful middle class. Of course, you've got your upper class, Brentwood, Bel Air, the rich people.
Yep. Your celebs.
Indeed. I'm out in the San Fernando Valley, so
people from
we call it over the hill. Right. The west side, that's where Hollywood's at, Melrose District, downtown. They kind of look down on people from the valley. Valley people kind of look down on folks from over the hill, and definitely have a bit of a divide there in the Hollywood Hills.
True enough.
Separates the city.
So I don't even remember how I found you. We ended up following each other from some thread. I don't know. I don't know if you remember. I don't remember.
It had to have been Three Gorges Dam.
Yeah. Oh, then maybe that's what it was. Because
it was Three Gorges Dam.
To catch people up. But I think I started following you when it was still, your name was Markets in Turmoil. And then you went to the flood coverage in China. And then you switched back recently. Is that
true? Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So
keep up with current events.
Yeah. So you were, I think what happened was there's this part of the Twitter sphere that is like economics coverage, or like, I don't know what to call it. Like
FinTwit. But FinTwit.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, FinTwit or FineTwit. I don't know. FINTWIT.
Financial Twitter.
Exactly.
Okay. So there's these big wigs like Investment Hulk and these other guys that you follow.
Yes.
And do you just know them through Twitter as well? Or do you know these guys?
No. Collect the follow. Come across a post of theirs that catches my eye. Check out their timeline.
Right. Because some of them got a lot of followers, like that Investment Hulk guy. He's pretty funny and he always types in all caps. And but it's not just financial stuff either. Like, you guys are talking about everything on Twitter, like current events, like you said, politics, whatever.
Sometimes politics does seep in, no doubt. I mean, finance and politics are intimately linked, whether anybody wants to acknowledge that. I've seen some folks that are part of the FinTwit community that think that they are independent of one another, have no links with one another. I beg to differ vehemently.
Right. But that makes sense just on the face of it, because policy dictates things in the financial world, right? I mean, taxes or whatever it might be.
Oh, absolutely. Right? Absolutely.
So
I mean,
now,
look at how the stock market did after they cut the corporate tax rate. And stock market shot through the roof, and perhaps it's completely because of the tax cuts. Perhaps it's got some things to do with the money printer going burr, but nobody's going to be able to sit there and say that politics and economics are not.
For sure. Now, would you call yourself, are you in the financial world for a living, or are you just interested in it? Kind of thing.
No, don't make a living. I own a couple of small businesses. I invest in the market for, honestly, I would like to say that I'm probably here to make money, but dude, it's gambling. let's be real with one another. The stock market's gambling.
Right. My perspective on the U.S. stock market comes from Peter Schiff. Now, I don't know if that's a bad thing or a good thing, but I tend to be a little heavy on the Schiff. As a Canadian, I just feel like he's one of the guys that kind of gives you that alternate view, even though it might not be doctrine, or it's his doctrine, what he's spitting. I don't know if I subscribe to everything that he says, but is he just more of a nuisance in the financial Twitter world, or do people respect him, or is he just like this gold bug that people get annoyed by?
I mean, that's what's your yardstick? What's your measure? What exactly is success? And, you know, are we going to gauge it by how much money does a guy have? How much right. is in his pocket? How verifiably accurate has he been with right. his, predictions? I guess it really depends on what your yardstick is and how you choose to define where he stands.
True enough. So what's the deal, yo, with the flood coverage? How did you, I mean, I think now people are aware of the floods in China, but do you want to give people a bit of overview? Like, have they subsided for the most part by now? I see BBC and Al Jazeera and a lot of coverage on it now, but when it was first happening, you were blasting Twitter with all these updates. And what do you, fill me in.
I think it started with just this. I don't want to pat myself on the back, but I think I've got a knack for, you know, seeing what's out there, seeing what's going to catch people's eyes. I mean, with like coronavirus, middle of January, my ear was to the ground, and I took a business trip at the end of January. At that point, it already had P100 mask. Had what's turning out to be so far a 9-month supply now of toilet paper that had already been amassed, and saw what was going on in China and saw that there was some misinformation that was going out. And I remember this picture. I know that you've seen it. The Google Earth picture showing what the dam looked like in 2018 versus I think it was 2009. And because of Google changing its algorithms for how they render pictures on maps now, and not having bird's eye view and moving over to a Google Earth perspective, it really looked like the dam was completely deformed and just ready to blow. Mm-hmm. And I've known about Three Gorges Dam since I was back in college in the early 2000s. And the engineering feats that were mankind is amazing. Yeah. But especially
Chinese.
Oh man, the scale of what they do over there and their engineering challenges that they're able to overcome mm-hmm. is absolutely impressive. And it was really that picture showing the dam being deformed and me saying to myself, I can't believe that it's really that bad, and starting to look into, okay, what is the current state of affairs, and finding the live stream, the camera feeds. Inevitably, there's a lot of videos that show up on Twitter primarily. They get reposted. They get posted over in China on WeChat and Weibo. And there's this weird conduit of people that are playing, I don't want to say both sides of the fence, but they bridge that divide and they aggregate the content from China and bring it over to Twitter. And you start seeing videos of these floods. You start seeing videos of cars floating down the highway, mudslides, entire buildings going down the side of the mountain, literally seeing this house going down in a flood. And the first 15 seconds of the video, it just looks like it's a house, and then the house starts collapsing. And you see there's like a person on the roof of this house that's collapsing in this massive flood that's passing by at dozens of miles per hour. And so there was definitely a lot of action with that. But by the same token, there was a lot of concern that the dam was going to collapse. And the more that I looked into it and the more I researched it, I realized this is, the dam's not ever going to collapse. And where is the source of this information that's putting out there? The dam's going to collapse. There's going to be this massive human catastrophe. Millions of people are going to die. And that was not the real story. The real story was the landslides, the flooding, the intentional flooding, the way that China handled the intentional flooding. That's really what the real story was with this thing. And that got lost in the mix. There was no real coverage in the media of how poorly China responded to what turned into a humanitarian disaster, where you're talking millions of people are displaced from their home. Tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of acres of farmland are rendered absolutely useless. And the ramifications of what comes with China's environmental disasters and what's going to happen to this farmland now that you've got it sodden with coal, oil, heavy metals, all kinds of chemicals, stuff that we don't even know what's in there. And that really is what got lost in the mix with that whole thing, was the dam was never going to collapse, but it was an absolute humanitarian disaster. And China expertly buried it, just like they've become so adept at.
Right. They're really good at that. Right. And, at least in the articles I read, it still doesn't seem like they're making it that big of a deal. I think I read something like 150 dead. They'll say something like 100,000 displaced or hundreds of thousands, but you're thinking the numbers are bigger than that, or?
Oh, no doubt. There is no way that the number of dead people are in the hundreds.
Right.
Just from the landslides that occurred all along the Yangtze River.
We understand the photos look amazing. Like, I mean, in a bad way, some of the photos that, you know, that you've been sharing and others have been sharing, it just kind of look, photoshopped, because, they just look intense, like, you know, 2 or 3 story homes that are, you know, just with the tip of the roof showing and that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's true, but you also take a look at some of these other photos and you start seeing that this is kind of a regular occurrence. And I'm not going to profess to be an expert on the Yangtze River at this point. Of course, I know more about it now than I did 6 months ago.
True.
But very early on in my having interest in this, became very apparent that this has been going on probably since the last ice age. And floods are a regular occurrence in this part of China.
I think they said 1998 was the last time. Like, this had just beat the record for how bad the floods were.
That probably has something to do with the dam's ability to impound floods from upstream. But the reality is, when you've got the kind of rains that they had very early on in summertime and historical rains, there was a lot of talk of these rains being biblical. And that was another very, very interesting aspect in my experience with this, moving through Twitter and seeing some of the discussion of how some higher force had something to do with this and was punishing this regime over in China for all of their misdeeds and bad things that they've done.
Because the state of China doesn't really recognize a religion, right? They are the religion, in a sense.
As far as I know, there really is no religion formally permitted in China. The Falun Gong are, from my understanding, they claim to primarily be about meditations, but it's evident to me from the followers that I've gained, but also the Falun Gong posters on Twitter that I've been following, really going back to coronavirus, they are very Christian. Very, very, very Christian. And you take a look at some other places in China. You've got the Uyghurs. That is a Muslim part of China that they are literally locking them up in concentration camps.
Yeah.
Enslaving them, cheap labor, all kinds of accusations of organ harvesting. And I don't know if there's any veracity to the organ harvesting, but certainly the concentration camps is verifiable. The slave labor is verifiable. And that is a Muslim community that is being, for lack of a better word, assimilated into the Chinese culture.
Yeah.
And that's really what's going on, is they are assimilating. You've got Christians that they're assimilating. You've got Muslims that they're assimilating. Now in Tibet, just within the last couple of weeks, there has been a lot of uproar in Tibet. You've got Mongolia. They had civil unrest in Mongolia, matter of fact, because China said that they're not going to teach in the schools using the Mongolian language, and that they're going to speak Han Chinese, which obviously is an assimilation into the larger regime. And certainly it fits with the accusations of communism, which is to eliminate religion and essentially replace religion with the state, and your new religion is now is now the Communist Party.
Yeah, it seems that that's China's thing, is the state. That's their next, and they look 100 years ahead, you know, not 5 or 10 years ahead. So they are trying to plant those seeds on an ongoing basis so they can achieve those goals over the long term.
They've had a lot of time to practice.
Yeah, a lot of time.
They've been at this for 5,000 years.
Right.
And I don't know if it's accurate to say that it's a perfection. Certainly, if you asked them, they would swear up and down that this is the perfect way of doing it.
Yeah.
And we see how these other regimes have performed. And the central theme to China is that this is communism, but with Chinese characteristics.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think that's them incorporating some of the lessons that they've learned over the last 3,000-4,000 years in controlling the population and
right. So that hard communism doesn't work. Now, how does that relate to you with your Animal Farm quote in your bio there? Are you a social democrat, or how do you define yourself?
I am a little bit right of the center. I mean, being from California, and especially being from Los Angeles, and I think it's fair to say anybody that's from a large city is going to have very moderate views compared to folks that are not from a large city. But I see fiscal waste. I pay taxes, and I see my tax money being pissed away. So in many senses, I would be labeled a conservative, maybe even so far as going a Republican. But I'm also very progressive in views. What you do in the privacy of your own home, that's your business. You're straight, you're gay, you bat for four different teams. I don't care. It's not a matter of concern to me.
Mm-hmm.
But it's such a polarized world that we're in today.
It is. And as your Canadian brother to the north, we kind of get a little bit of trickle down from all the chaos intellectually that goes on in the States. But definitely when we look at the news these days, we're like, you know what? Like, Canada's all right. Like, we're chill to be
I've
up
got
here for now.
I have thought highly of Canadians for a long time. I've been exposed to Canadian culture since my formative years because of the path that I happen to go across, and I've thought highly of Canada for a long time. But I have got to tell you, over the last 3 months, I've been left scratching my head at what I am assuming are not disingenuous people, and I know for certain, and some other communities that I'm a part of, it's just very interesting the weird infatuation that some Canadians have with American politics, and especially especially Donald Trump and the conservative side of American politics.
Yeah, I feel like I could try to explain it or defend Canadians in some sense, but it's definitely, even when you talk about U.S. politics, like on this show, we sometimes talk a lot about U.S. politics, and people will ask you, you know, why do you care so much about America? Why don't you just worry about the Canadian? Like, the truth is, at the end of the day, it's kind of boring here. Like, more shit happens in the States. There's more people. There's just, you know, the whole history of the United States, that there are older brother that is involved in all the war, or, you know, sure, we did our part here and there in history, but it's a tenth of the population, and we're so spread out that, do you know what I mean? Like, we don't bump into each other as much on the streets. And so there's this, we're kind of bored here sometimes. We have like our crazy stories.
Oh, I know. But I've been a fan of Canadian culture. I started watching Trailer Park Boys during the first season of it being available.
Yeah.
Saw the episodes first, went back to the movie that started it all, and was a huge fan of Trailer Park Boys. I love Letterkenny.
Yeah.
That is another, another show that I get great satisfaction out of. And you know, it's interesting. I see a lot of parallels in Canadian culture and politics as we have here in the United States. I've got a special interest for First Nations. And I hate to say it, the way that Canada has shit on the natives up there, the same way that the United States has shit on the natives here in our country, and really all up and down the Americas, my Central America, and even going down into South America. So I can certainly understand the lack of action up there, for sure. And I think it is somewhat related to the size of the country, the population. You've got fewer large cities. I mean, how many people live in Toronto? I think you got like 1 million people in city proper, and like 4 or 5 million in the metro area.
I think
area.
In the GTA, it might be like 7 or 8 even. I could be wrong on that. But yeah, our only three big cities is Montreal, Vancouver, and Toronto. So those are where most of the people are packed.
Right. And you know, another thing with Canadian culture I've had a soft spot for is the French Canadians versus the non-French Canadians and the folks from Quebec and everything. But I've got to ask, why the inordinate interest in only one side of American politics? What is it about that?
You mean the obsession with Republican?
I don't even know if it's necessarily an obsession with Republicans. I think it's Donald Trump. I don't think Canadians really cared about American politics very much until this TV star, this celebrity came along and
Yeah. But I mean, you got to admit, Americans are a little obsessed with it too. No, like the whole, you got your TDS, you got your devotion, and you got your derangements.
He has done a fantastic job of leveraging the media empire of the United States to his advantage. Mm-hmm. He is a master of being in front of the camera. The knack that he was born with and that he's been able to maintain really throughout his entire lifetime. And I remember listening to him on Howard Stern in the 90s. I used to listen to Howard Stern when I was in high school, and really didn't stop listening to Howard Stern. I want to say when he went off of the air, and moved to satellite radio.
Is
when I stopped listening to Howard Stern. I mean, understand, I was listening to Howard Stern when I was like, I remember like 13 years old. I was going to baseball camp during summertime, and the driver that picked us all up and corralled us all to go get warehoused at summer camp for 8 hours a day while our parents went and worked and made money. So it's an American thing. And understand that California's already gone through this. We had Arnold Schwarzenegger for the governor. What does Arnold Schwarzenegger know about running a state of, at that time, 36, 37 million people? You know, the Terminator, but even before that, Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan
was a movie star when he became the governor of California, and he flipped that into becoming the president of the United States, obviously. And not only that, but somehow becoming the messiah of the Republican Party.
Right.
Which I have got to tell you, I don't understand. He is the most, he's further left on the spectrum than Joe Biden is. A lot of people don't realize this. Ronald Reagan took away guns, 1986 gun legislation, and required registration of like machine guns and suppressors and so on and so forth. And Ronald Reagan took away a lot of guns. He granted amnesty to hundreds of thousands of brown people from Central America and South America, socialized medicine. You show up in an emergency room in the United States of America, doesn't matter whether you've got the ability to pay. They don't even ask. You get treated and you get made so that you're not going to die immediately. And you are entitled to that at any emergency room in the United States of America that receives federal funding. That came from Ronald Reagan. He passed that legislation. And so how he's held as this messiah is to me as a Californian, really left scratching my head, because he was governor before he became president. And I think it's got a lot to do with them being showmen. They're obviously both actors. Mm-hmm. Schwarzenegger was never going to be president because he's not a natural born citizen. But I'll bet you if there was some way for Arnold Schwarzenegger to run for president,
he would have.
Oh, absolutely. No question.
Well, it is showmanship, right? Like, isn't politics a lot of theater anyway? Like, I mean,
oh yeah,
they're kind of born. They're perfect for it.
Isn't that what the hallmark of a good actor is a good liar, somebody that can be somebody that they're not and be so convincing at being this person that they're not, that, you know, you look at a movie like Schindler's List. How many people that acted in Schindler's List are, you know, card carrying members of the Nazi party? None of them. But boy, I'd swear they were.
Mm-hmm.
I'd swear they were. And I think that's got a lot to do with what politics is, which is being somebody that you're not. And I don't know if pandering is the best word to describe it, but it's kind of what it comes down to is pandering to as many people as you possibly can and getting away with it.
Yeah. You know, I am perplexed by the question you raised about why are people so obsessed with Trump? And everybody seems to ask that question every day, and maybe there's multiple reasons, but on the face of it, I just think he's just such an odd guy, and his background is just filled with so many interesting stories and schemes. And just the way that he taught, like everything about it is just odd, funny, interesting, hyper real. Right. So there's just some gravity to it, depending whatever side you're on, whether you're.
Oh, I don't disagree with that at all. I think a big part of it is the time and place.
Oh, yeah.
Imagine if George Bush was president in a time of Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, etc.
He's just good at dodging shoes. I don't know what he would do with all this.
I think all politicians are pretty adept at that. Dodging it's all shoes? You know, I think it all, well, yeah, spin. Yeah. Yeah.
No, but I mean literally.
I remember that. In fact, that guy who threw the shoe at him, I just came across. Dude, that guy's on Twitter.
No way.
I started following him like 2 weeks ago. He is very proud of that. He is the guy that threw the shoe.
I better follow him. Maybe I'll have him on the show.
I think he would be, I think that he would be an interesting interview for you because he still feels very much the same way as he did back then, which is stay out of our country, dude. Let us work out our own problems.
Yeah.
And stop being worried about what we're doing. And basically go back home and worry about yourselves.
That was an unfortunate situation, the Iraq War, because caused a lot of damage. But despite that, it's interesting how many people who hated George Bush, American and Canadian or otherwise, back then now seem to like him.
I knew this shit was coming back when I was just getting out of college, having gone through college and being of the age where, you know, you think you know everything, but it turns out that you don't know jack shit. But we do look back on George Bush, and it is amazing to me that he's held in any regard as like a good president at all whatsoever, because in my little microcosm, in the little bubble that I live in and I was going through back then, was that he was literally the worst president in the history of the United States. That he just, I mean, the way that he speaks, the interviews that he gave, the Bushisms that we, you know, that we laugh at now and we look back at and we think that they're funny. But at the time you're like,
when the Daily Show was killing it,
did the president really just say what he thought that he said? I don't remember the exact words, but something about, you know, they're the worst terrorists and so are we, or something like that. And he doesn't mean to say it, but he's Bush, and some people have a way of mincing their words in a way that.
Yeah. Yeah. He was like how Trump is now, but like an early primordial form of that, where everybody was kind of a little hyper obsessed with them and little, chastising him when they could because of the weird shit that he would say. And the whole lying about weapons of mass destruction and getting involved in some insane war and then broadcasting the hanging of a world leader after they found him in the hole.
American imperialism. Look at the way that we look back on Osama bin Laden. Look at the way that we look back on Gaddafi.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the way that we look back on Saddam Hussein, which, you know, when I was going through school is obviously when Bush was president and we had this conflict with Saddam, who was our friend in the 80s.
Yeah.
And now we kind of have like this similar situation with Afghanistan. We're still over in Afghanistan, though. Those guys were our friends over in the 80s when we were fighting the Russians.
Right. But just devil's advocate, don't you think that just because someone's your friend today doesn't always mean that that's forever, right? On a geopolitical scale.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. There's no doubt about that, but that's a relationship cultivation and is it because they're only our you know, enemy of our enemy is our friend thing. And I think that's got something to do with it is when you make the enemy of your enemy your friend, there's going to be a point of time where that person's likely to be your enemy as well. And so it's just very, very interesting to me to see all of that happening, looking back on it, looking at the history of everything. And we're really kind of in the same spot to a certain degree now. But I will tell you that, you know, circling back to the dam and China and melding it with this is we start seeing a pattern of history repeating itself.
Yeah. Yeah,
making same mistakes.
One thing that, for example, a good friend of mine who's on the show a lot, he used to be a left-leaning NDP supporter in Canada. Nowadays, he's switched to more the right side of things, and he's very much pro-Trump. And the reason why is because of, in his words, foreign policy, like we just talked about Bush and the Iraq War. Whereas this guy will look at Trump and say, you know, there's been some strategic moves, but there's no giant foreign wars, that kind of thing. So it is interesting that Trump has a lot of bad things, but even if you compare him to Bush, there's it is still a very different scenario. You know, this pandemic obviously is somewhat comparable to a war, I guess. What would you say? Somewhat.
I don't. Well, you know, no. I mean, in policy response and shaping of the public's mind of everything, perhaps so. But the pandemic is not an identifiable enemy that you can shoot a bunch of missiles and rockets at and make a good show.
Yeah.
And you know, beat it into submission. This thing cannot be beat into submission. And you know, to circle over to the foreign policy, you know, to me, I look at Trump and pardon my French, but he's a pussy. He is an absolute pussy. And that is what's guiding our policy responses now, is that he doesn't want to get into a war, which is good, because the flip side of that is to circle back to the Bush years where we go too far and we start looking for enemies and start wars around fabricated enemies. Our enemy with Bush was Saudi Arabia. All of those 9/11 hijackers were Saudi Arabia. They were in Afghanistan. They were in Iraqi, but you know, because we need Saudi Arabia's oil, they get a pass. And that's really what's guiding a lot of these policy responses now is business. Saudi Arabia has gotten away with so much shit under Donald Trump and is wielding a stick that they've never had. And ironically, so is Israel. And this Middle East peace is something that I'm keeping a close eye on, because it doesn't seem to me that Israel is getting anything out of these major moves forward that we've been having in the Middle East. You've got all these countries that are signing peace accords. I mean, never mind that they never actually had any formal beef with Israel. It was just you're Jewish, I'm Arab, and you know, we're supposed to hate each other because, you know, Jewish and Arabs hate each other. But they've never had like a formal beef with each other. And we've got all these Middle Eastern countries that are getting warplanes, getting missiles, getting radar systems. America is profiting off of that. That is a hell of a shot in the arm for our military industrial complex. I don't see what Israel's getting out of it. And giving all of these countries in the Middle East all of this war material, is somebody going to look me in the eye and with a straight face say these Arabs are going to start loving these Jewish people? Are they going to go hug everything out? Are we going to forget that these folks have been fighting over a patch of dirt in the desert for 5,000 years? That, you know, we look at in the Western world, like, why do we care about this patch of dirt over in the Middle East? Who gives a shit about it? But boy, you get the Arabs and the Jews fighting over this patch of dirt, and look at where we are. So I don't know what
religious history there.
Oh, big time. I got to tell you, when I learned about what Great Britain did in the Middle East in the early 1900s and the groundwork that they laid for the entire world being fucked up for the next 100 years, I was shocked. I was awed. I thought, you know, this is part of going through college. You think you know everything. And then you start taking these courses and you start learning about how things actually are. And so I just really have a high level taking away from what I learned, which is that Great Britain basically fucked up the Middle East in the 1910s, 1920s, 1930s. And that we can basically thank Great Britain for a vast majority of the world's ills.
That's very true. And I think,
really, yeah. I hate to say it, man, going like the last 500 years.
Yeah, no, I mean, you look at the, how much of the world they controlled at one point. It's a little mind blowing. And, yeah, it's safe to say all their actions were, not all good.
Not, you know, for what benefit and what purpose the sun has been setting on the British Empire for a long time.
Right.
But yet still there are these ties back, especially you being a Canadian, you can appreciate all too well the reach that Great Britain had. Technically, she's still your queen.
Technically, yes.
Technically speaking. I mean, practically speaking, it's completely different. But technically speaking, you got to bend the knee to the queen.
Yep. Yep. Not me personally, but yes. You know, I was going to ask you a couple more things before I let you go on this beautiful Sunday afternoon. You know, you share a lot of vids and stuff on Twitter, and it's interesting amidst all the protests and the riots and the division that's going on in the States is that you see so many videos, and it's easy for one person to share a lot of, say, if we talk about it, Ian Chong on Twitter, who's constantly sharing, you know, any BLM protester or rioter.
That guy loves stirring up shit. He's an expert at playing to his crowd. Yes,
he is. He is. And I'll admit, when I first found him, I was like, this guy's cool. Yeah, he says some edgy shit. And a lot of what he says, I agree with. But the more I follow him, like a lot of these other personalities, I realize that there's a lot of bullshit.
It's a grift. That guy, he's running a grift. I started following him back in Corona, mm-hmm. and knew a bit about him. I remember seeing his name back in Gamergate,
Malaysian guy. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've got to tell you, I've been extremely online since like 1998.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to profess to have been on every piece of internet drama since then, but I've been extremely online since 1998, mm-hmm. have been fortunate to be members of communities that were, I'm a member of a community that was buying Bitcoin when it was at like $40.
Oh, I wish I hopped on the train there, man.
God, did I fuck that up? but I saw what you saw. You know, you get that initial view of him, and he looks like he's putting out news and being kind of neutral. I thought that he was like anti-Chinese. Mm-hmm. Really thought that he was anti-Chinese and not even anti-Chinese per se, but anti-CCP. Right. I don't like the Communist Party of China. I don't have anything good to say about them. They're a cancer on the earth. And for all of my opinions about Donald Trump, if he actually had the balls to take them on, I would support him fully in that. And if he did that shit right, I will tell you that's an issue that would give me a good likelihood of flipping completely. But to circle back to Chong, he's running a grift. And if you'll notice, that guy is pushing his merchandise store. He is selling Blue Lives Matters t-shirts.
Oh.
He's selling mugs talking about don't tread on me. Best research that I can find on him, he's never set foot in the United States of America.
I think I've found that as well to be true.
I believe that he lives over in Malaysia. I believe that he's been invaded by ants more times than I can count. And certainly Google on him and ants and his opinion on ants, and you'll find some funny stories with him. But he's playing to his audience. You know what he is? He's like a little copycat of Andy Ngo, or however you pronounce that guy from Portland.
He's not.
Andy's
a bad guy? Because he also comes off as very...
I don't know if he's a bad guy, but Andy's running a grift too,
is not like doctor. I mean, at least like the videos and stuff they'll share. It's not like they're doctors, right?
I'll tell you, dude, and I got a good perspective on this on the Chinese videos of the floods. Mm-hmm. The way that they choose to edit these videos and what they carefully show you and
what they don't show you, maybe,
man, 2 or 3 seconds on a 20 or 30 second video
makes all the difference.
Can
yeah.
absolutely change the entire context in which it's there.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And, you know, he's done a very, very good job of finding people that like to be separated from their money. You go to Andy's page and you subscribe to Andy and he's not entirely direct with it, but he's all too willing to take your money, support my journalism. Mm-hmm. I need supplies, getting this public information, getting people's mugshots, looking up their LinkedIn profiles. Mm-hmm. It takes money. And what Andy's doing is a little bit dangerous. Ian's not going so far as to, I don't think it's fair to call it a dox because this is all public information, mm-hmm. but this is public information that, you know, it's a lot different when someone who doesn't have 1 million followers is putting it out there. It, you know, the public information is depends on whose hands it's in. Mm-hmm. And if it took 1 million, if 1 million people were reaching out to get these people's mugshots, it's a lot different than say Andy getting the guy's mugshot and putting it out. Mm-hmm. But Ian's big problem is that he is trying to be so edgy that he'll put false information out there.
Like, and then the guy that he identified falsely,
in Compton.
Yeah. And then
I will tell you that law enforcement in Los Angeles is a subject that's very, very near and dear to my heart. I don't know if I've pointed this out. I have a degree in the administration of justice. Mm-hmm. So okay. I've got a unique perspective on how the law enforcement world works in the respect that I have a degree that is usually only for people that get into law enforcement. But I got to tell you what I saw in getting my degree, it became apparent to me that it's not a job or a career for me. Mm-hmm. And I was able to see that this is, you know, you know that you've got a something that you're good at. This is not something that I would be good at. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, he put out the name of somebody that he found on Facebook. Actually, not him. One of his tens of thousands of followers found it, sent it to him to amplify. Turns out that it was false information. Unverifiable. And once it was shown to be false, he didn't retract it. In fact, the sheriff's clarified. The Los Angeles Sheriff Department put out a news release saying this is a person of interest only. They're not a suspect. They're not under arrest. We'd like to ask him some questions. But at the same time, Ian's calling him a suspect and the sheriff's determined that this man was not the person that had anything to do with this, was not their suspect, was not their guy. Those tweets are still up on Ian's feed. He hasn't pulled him down. That guy's name is still on Ian's
feed. Oh, I thought he did. Okay, so he didn't pull him at all. That's part of what he sells you, right? If you're going to follow him, it's the up to the second updates, which are enticing to follow, but that comes with that caveat that they're going to be inaccurate sometimes.
Well, and that's part of news reporting, and that is,
but that's what he always rails on, so it doesn't make sense for him to be able to do it.
Well, they had, you know, that's the hypocrisy.
Yeah.
The absolute, you know, the absolute hypocrisy. Like, you go on Ian's feed, you go on Andy's feed, you don't see these MAGA chuds running people over. You don't see these MAGA chuds shooting paintballs at people as they're going through intersections where they have a red light and they're supposed to be stopped and people are legally in the crosswalk and they got to jump out of the way because this big Ford F-350 with some dude in a flat brim hat driving it is screaming through. Mm-hmm. And you'll never find those on Andy's feed. I mean, and in fairness, and if you check my, you know, you're obviously on my Twitter feed, you've got guys on the other side. You've got your folks from Oregon that only post shit that is I don't want to say that it's pro BLM, but you know, for the sake of this conversation, it's fair to call it pro BLM.
Yeah.
And those guys don't post anything about the Proud Boys or whoever you want to label them as. So really you've got to take everything with a grain of salt and use it as a small piece of your information, a small piece of your final determining factor. And my trouble with Andy and Ian both is that they've got a lot of followers. That's their only source of information. And that's who they rely on exclusively.
Well, like what you just said, I feel like it's got to be only like 20% of people who actually do that and use a fine tooth comb to go through what they're looking at. I feel like it's got to be 70 or 80% of people who get sucked into one view or the other.
You got to see both sides of it.
Yeah, it's dangerous.
You're somebody in America that wants to have involvement in the political process. Canadian, same thing. Whether you want to be involved in the American political process,
we're just going to watch. We're just going to watch.
But see both sides of it.
And yeah.
Look at everything in a big picture sense, and then you can start making determinations and decisions from there. And you're right. It is a very, very small portion, and it goes back to the polarization of. Yeah. Both sides are vehement about their positions, and I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a liberal. There's a lot of shit that the Democrats and the liberals that do that I want absolutely no part of.
Right.
That
Dilbert guy. That Dilbert guy.
Oh, Scott Adams. Yeah.
Yeah, Scott Adams. He, not saying I like anything that he says, but I think early on when I first started listening to him. During the Trump administration, he said something about we're all watching two different movies. We're in two different theaters. That still kind of holds true to me. And it applies to sort of everything we're talking about. But the one thing that sticks out for me lately is this Bill Maher. He did a montage the other episode about all the times that he said that, watch, I don't think Trump's going to leave peacefully. And then even Trump's kind of quoting him. And then now the media is picking up on this idea. And then they asked him straight up the other day, will there be a peaceful transition of power if you lose? And he said, his answer is, again, applies to this two movie thing, because people say, don't listen to what Trump says. Don't just treat it as he's crazy and all this, take it as a warning, right? As Bill Maher would think that this is true, that he's really not going to leave peacefully. I think that it's just Trump being Trump and saying, well, we'll see. There's not going to be a transit. Like he said something to that effect. I think what he's trying to say is we're not going to lose. Right. So he's being a big baby. He doesn't want to answer the question like an adult. He just says, he says something that he knows is going to piss people off. Right. And maybe make them think or believe more the Bill Maher idea that he's not going to leave peacefully and that there's going to be a civil war or a gunfight at the White House. Right. So,
I can't imagine the logistics of that actually playing out.
Right.
And folks that are above my pay grade, I would love for them to have debates about what the actual logistics of this are. I mean, the reality is our election happens and we'll probably know the result that night. But there are times where results change. A great example is the race for sheriff here in Los Angeles County in 2018. And I went to bed that night at like 11:30. I watched the news and they had the incumbent sheriff. Congratulations. Great job. Four more years, blah, 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 blah. Literally wake up the next morning and his opponent's been declared the winner. And the incumbent sheriff has conceded defeat. And that didn't happen until about 3 o'clock in the morning. But the reality is what the votes are don't matter in our political process. We have our electoral college and our electors who the Supreme Court has just held are required to follow the voting that the state, each individual state has directed them to make. I mean, I don't know if you've if you've got visibility, if you saw what happened, but there would be some possibility where like every elector in the state of California could hop ship, and there was some concerns that they could all say, you know what, screw it, we're all voting for Donald Trump. Donald Trump gets all 55 of California's electoral
votes. Even though the votes didn't go that way, is that what you're saying?
Even though the results of our election would say that 55 votes need to go the other way. Mm-hmm. And the states have a remedy for that, which is to basically fire these guys and bring someone else in who will vote their way. But that electoral college does not occur until sometime in December. And really, we don't care about the results of this shit until sometime in January. The inauguration is supposed to be January 20th. So if it takes them a week to count the votes, a day, 4 days, in the big picture, it doesn't matter. And I think this kind of circles back to what you're thinking about Donald Trump, is he's just being a showman, blustering, saying things. And I think there's some validity on that, because it doesn't matter if Donald Trump or Joe Biden is declared the winner on election night. It doesn't matter if it takes until the next day. And we don't live in a world where we have to know that night, I would hope. But I think there are some legitimate concerns that it's going to, I don't want to turn into a sham election. Mm-hmm. But I think some early returns will come into where Donald Trump is leading, and he's potentially going to say, you know what, I'm the winner, and there's nothing you can do about it. But let's say he does do that. Mm-hmm. Not going to change anything. You still have to wait for all of the votes to get counted, and you've got 50 different states, 50 mm-hmm. different systems. Not every state handles these things the same way. So I think you're right that there's a lot of blustering. And I think he's creating more chaos. I think Donald Trump, he enjoys creating chaos, and that's part of his political success, is creating chaos and then leveraging what comes from that chaos and being so adept at moving on to the next next chaotic scenario.
He's definitely fluid at that. I don't know if behind closed doors he's less comfortable, but he makes it seem that he's comfortable with all the.
Look at his business history. He's been running businesses into the ground since the mid-80s.
Yeah, he's used to that. Yeah.
And banks keep giving him money. Kept giving him money.
Yeah.
And they kept loaning him money. And if you can. Man, if you can fool a bank into them giving you your money, I think getting a vote out of some average Joe, whether it's an average American, or I'm not going to sit here and profess that Americans are any more intelligent than Canadians or vice versa. Mm-hmm. But if you can extract money from a bank, I think you can extract a vote from an average Joe.
From the average person, for sure.
Especially after you've run your airlines went bankrupt, your casinos went bankrupt, your developments went bankrupt, your school went under. If you can still get banks to give you money after all of that shit, then getting a vote, I think, is no problem.
What do you think about sort of the swing voters in this election? Like, who are the people that are going to make the change, make an effect? Because it does seem that for the last 4 years, each side or every person has been more entrenched on their side. It doesn't feel like there's been a lot of.
I don't think there's any swing voters.
No, so it's going to be the same.
I think there's the undecided voters potentially.
Yeah.
And the only way that you can be undecided at this point in my eyes is if you've not been paying attention for the last 3.5 years.
Sure.
Which I will tell you is a substantial portion of the country. Just with my own microcosm and the people that are around me, it is amazing to me how many of them like have no clue of what's going on in the world.
Yeah,
they don't listen to news at all. I mean, I don't expect
so much shit. Like, only guys like you can be up on the floods and stuff. There's so much bombardment.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of it is, you know, it's a fight or flight.
Yeah.
Yeah. You have that kind of bombarding going on, and you either fight like I do and put your ear to the ground and have your thumb on the pulse of things.
Yeah, yeah.
Or you go the other way. And, you know, maybe sticking your head in the ground is not the fairest of characterizations, but I think there's a lot of people that don't really know what's going on out there.
Yeah.
And that is your quote unquote swing voter, and what's going to influence them. I got to tell you, bud, at this point, I don't know. They turn their TV on at the right time. 50-50 chance of it going either way, because depending on when you turn the TV on and what channel you turn it to,
mm-hmm.
you know, one scenario can be described three different ways. I don't know how many swing voters there really are left.
That's true. The one thing that sticks out of my mind, though, I do feel like there's got to be some Republicans that voted for Trump just because. And now I've seen the 4 years and said, you know what, that's not quite what I wanted. Or he was a little too left for me almost, or the bailouts I didn't like, or right. There's got to be some people like that voted for him and then have had a bad taste in their mouth.
I don't know.
No,
I will tell you that the Republican Party in America, the GOP, they are the party of one issue voters.
Right.
My technician, the kid that works for me here in California, all he gives a shit about in the world is guns.
Yeah.
There's nothing else in the world that he cares about. And he's going to vote for whoever treats his guns the best.
Right.
Which is obviously going to universally be a Republican. Mm-hmm. My factory manager for my business in Pennsylvania, same thing. Literally the only thing in the world that this guy cares about is guns. Could not care less about tax policy, foreign relations, social welfare, Medicare. I mean, and understand that this guy is on Medicare. He's on Social Security. He gets his medication mailed to him. He didn't give a shit that the post office was getting messed with. And he went, I think his medicine, he was without medicine he wasn't without medicine. The last 5 days on his prescription refill, he was having to cut pills in half and having to have his medication. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. He called me up like a week ago. Can we go to put a Trump sign outside the front of the factory? And I said, yeah, go ahead. Yeah. I don't care. You know, everyone else in this part of the country is voting for Trump anyways. So, you know, I'm kind of worried that if you don't put the sign out there that like some bad things might happen to us. And
right.
So I don't know how many of those people are there, man. You just got so many one issue voters. You've got your religious people. Look at what's going happening right now with the Supreme Court nomination.
Right.
And we're going to put, I believe, our seventh Catholic.
The Catholics.
On the Supreme Court. Well, hold on, man. Evangelicals and Catholics don't get along. They stand behind Donald Trump. They'll make nice with one another. But let's not forget what I was reading an article this morning about Pastor Robert Jeffers. That guy has said a lot of mean things about Catholicism, calling it a cult. And yet these people are so united behind this issue of abortion that they're willing to overlook their fundamental differences and the fact that I'd like to have a conversation with these guys. Who gets Jerusalem, guys? When Jesus comes, who gets Jerusalem? Is it the Catholics that like the idols and think Mary is a saint? Or is it the evangelicals that there are no idols and Mary is just some other lady? Which one of those two gets to live in Jerusalem?
As a Dutch person, I'll tell you, it's the Calvinists that are going to get everything.
Boy, and let's go. let's go ask somebody from Brooklyn, New York. They'll say the Jews get to live there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even Muslims, man, I remember when I found out that like Jerusalem is like got holy implications for the Muslim faith.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
I shit bricks over it. And then this is, you know, to circle back to something that got mentioned very early in the chat here, these people have been fighting over this patch of dirt for 5,000 years.
Right. This election is not going to change their mind or something.
Until two of them have been eliminated. Not even one of them. Until two of them have been eliminated, they're going to keep fighting over this patch of dirt.
Right.
And look back in human history and look at the major conflicts that have occurred in the last 2,000 years. And look at how many of them are related to this patch of dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Vast majority. And now we've got, you know, the Communist Party, the Chinese sticking their nose in things. But no matter what happens over in China, no matter what happens in Russia, you still got these three groups of people are going to be fighting to the death over this patch of dirt. And, you know, so now we got to start thinking, what's the end game here?
We got that. We got the South China Sea. We could go on for days and days about all this conflict and this craziness.
We haven't touched on Russia wanting to exert itself and the fact that Russia's been run by a KGB dictator for
20 years,
damn near 20 years, bud. Yeah. We had our 10 years, you know, where they were run by a drunk.
Yep.
And then apparently, you know, magically our enemy has turned into our friend.
Things change. Things just change overnight.
But yet they stay the same. The more things change, the more they stay the same. Really, I got to tell you, you know,
that's one like of Tupac. It reminds me of Tupac. Yeah, go on.
The one of the earliest pieces of information that I remember from coming across a Corona, Year of the Metal Rat. You familiar with Chinese?
The years.
Astrology.
Year of the Dragon over here.
So they've got their years of the various different animals, but then you've got subsects of those animals.
Yeah.
Well, we're in the year of the metal rat. And as far as the Chinese culture is concerned, like the year of the metal rat is some of the worst shit that can happen. And this is on a 60-year cycle.
Mm-hmm.
So we go back 60 years, 1960. What was that? Well, we can and understand that it's.
Well, 80 is like predicting the dragon, 86 is the tiger. Those are the only ones I know.
Well, 1960 was smack dab in the middle of the Great Leap Forward. Major famine. I don't know how many tens of millions of people. I guess this was when Mao was having his competition with Stalin to see how many of their own people they could kill. But this was in the middle of the Great Leap Forward, and you had tens of millions of Chinese that died from famine. Then you circle back to 1900. I don't remember what it was. Something bad happened in 1900. I don't know if it was floods.
Yeah.
And this was something I wanted to point out earlier. As you look at the to give you some perspective on Yangtze and the floods and the dam, throughout human history, the worst floods have always happened in China. As far as like death, number of dead people, amount of land that was impacted. You look at like the 10 worst floods in human history and 9 of them are over in China. Mm-hmm. So to, you know, the more things change, the more they say the same and how things are a cycle. 1840 is when opium wars, they were knee deep in the opium wars in the 1840s when Great Britain came along and basically
got them high as fuck.
Enslaved China. And yeah, you do our drugs and you buy our drugs or we're going to kill you.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't help but wonder, and I guess it's something that I should personally look into a little bit more, but with Britain's involvement in the colonization of China, Hong Kong having just been handed back to Chinese control to a certain extent, I think, 21 years ago, I think 99 is when Hong Kong was quote unquote handed back over to China.
After 100 years, was it?
And look at where Hong Kong is at now and the influence that China is exerting on the people of Hong Kong to assimilate them.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I would love to have somebody objectively have a conversation with me about how there's not a lot of parallels between how China is dealing with civil unrest in Hong Kong and how American government is dealing with civil unrest here in the United States. Boy, is it amazing how things are so very, very different, but yet they're so very, very similar.
Man, some wise words. And I think that's a perfect area to close upon. Is there any other major announcements or things you want people to know? Do you want people to follow you, or do you want them to just stay the hell out of your business?
No, man. Join me. come to my Twitter feed. I got dank memes.
Dank memes.
I enjoy the stock market. I enjoy observing the stock market. I kind of feel like my problem is I got my hands in too many hats, and I guess that's why some folks on Twitter, maybe I should have like six or eight different handles. Cause I feel like I'm losing out on some people because my,
they want to hear one thing. You might have something else going on at the time.
Yeah. But the number of people that told me that I just need to shut up and post about the dam because they don't like my opinions about politics.
I disagree there. I think it's fine for you to just, whatever you're into at the time, just let people know.
Join, you know, I would love for them to join the conversation. Give them my handle. I don't block people. I don't mute people. That's taking an L right there.
True.
And I'm always open to, new perspectives, having things explained to me and clear and rational. And
yep. My
mind is always, it's always possible for it to be changed. Of course, I'm a lot older than I was when I was in school. I still think I know everything, but I'm wise enough to know that I don't actually know everything. And
so true. You know,
that I think is something that I think a lot of people out there would be well served by, is always keep an open mind, always look at things critically, try to maintain being rational, and let those things be your guide and see where the path takes you.
Hella dope. And the Twitter handle for everybody is @public_Juan, JUAN. Bro, nice to meet you over the internet. Thanks for joining me on the show. It's been a blast.
I hope it's good. I hope it's good. I hope there's some good feedback. And
you never know. This can be the start of like a book deal or something, you know. You
could, it's been real. It's been real. It's been fun. It's been a good chat. It's been a good chat.
Well, mad respect, man.
Again, in the future, it doesn't even have to be here. I've been following you for a long time. You're a guy with interesting perspectives, and I'd love to chat with you some more in the future.
100%. Well, I'll catch you on the Twitter sphere, man. And we'll talk soon.
Take it easy, bud. Thanks for having me.
Later, bro. Peace.